It's Dusty and Mike with some exciting Gays shop updates.
Old prints are making a comeback as we're looking to clear out stock to make room for new items, including posters from season 8 and 9.
For the remainder of the summer through Labor Day 2026, all individual prints will be $8 and all collections will be $20. That's right. It's basically a half off sale on all of our older prints.
And when the summer is over, our older prints will only be available as collection, not as individual prints. So act now and bring some of the national parks home with you.
Head to shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com or visit the link on our website.
These low, low prices won't stick around forever.
Hello and welcome to Gays at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike, and welcome to our Season 8 Summit.
If you are joining us for the first time, our Summit episodes are like our season wrap party. It's our chance to encompass all the parks we visited this past season and view them through four different lenses that investigate the parks a little deeper by examining the visitor experience, the history, the environment and wildlife, and on a much more grander scale, the hiking and experiences within the parks.
Each season, we have also worked to tweak the format of our Summit episodes just a bit, allowing for a fresh look at the parks we covered all season long, while also touching base on important issues on the slate that need to be examined.
In this episode, we're discussing environment. So sort of like an episode of The Magic School Bus or Bill Nye the Science Guy, two shows that we were both raised on.
So what lessons did we learn from these TV icons, Miss Frizzle and Mr. Nye?
I mean, get curious.
Yeah.
There are more answers than you know.
Inertia is a property of matter.
That's right. I remember watching Bill Nye and they had, what a brain, what a brain, what a brain, what a mighty good. And I was like, this is for me.
I think that's where I probably developed my parody love.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you love are an incredible songs. Parody artist. Mm-hmm. You have parody artistry coming out of your ears.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I mean, good God, Bill Nye was, I watched that all the time. Magic School Bus was like a little bit below me, but I still watched it sometimes because I remember they would play it sometimes in like middle school science class because it really did a great job of explaining some concepts for sure.
Yeah.
But Bill Nye was definitely more the person who I just liked. He was like, if anyone tells you that the earth is flat, that is wrong. And here's why. He just goes in and like he addressed everything and was just like so fun about it.
Yeah.
Because science is fun.
Oh my gosh. So much
science
fun.
Science is fun.
Yeah. So bringing it back to our parks from the season, Death Valley, Pinnacles, White Sands, and Saguaro National Park, each of these parks features its own specific ecosystem full of flora, fauna, mammals, insects, reptiles, amphibians, and more. We've actually spent a lot of time this season talking about the flora and fauna that can be found in these parks, from our trail mixes on dark sky parks, water conservation in the desert, California condors, wildlife of White Sands, and the many cacti of Saguaro National Park. We fairly succinctly covered a great deal of information that related to the environment already. That doesn't mean that there isn't more information or that we won't continue to chat about it in this Summit episode, but there is a greater issue at hand that is an important issue to bring up to the forefront before diving in deeper.
For much of this season, we talked about the importance of water, especially because 3/4 of the parks we have visited this season are desert parks. These are environments where water is already scarce and incredibly valuable to the plants and animals that call these parklands their home.
Water is an incredibly important resource that is becoming more scarce in the western United States, specifically where snowpacks no longer sustain watersheds, states, and communities like they used to. This in large part is due to climate change and the impact new weather patterns are having in once mountainous alpine regions, which used to act as snow melts, snow releases for communities downriver. You can hear more about this in our Trail Mix episode, Colorado River in Danger, from this season.
While climate change is an incredibly big driver of the water shortages that are befalling the West, a comparable behemoth is also arriving and is poised to leave just as large an environmental destructive wake, that being AI.
If you've listened to the show or have sort of gathered where our politics lie, then you know that we are firmly in the anti-AI camp. As an actual thinking, creative human being, it is kind of an utter disservice to you and your species to stoop to the level of AI usage. It's pure laziness and an abdication of your own intellect. In fact, if you're willingly using AI, well, maybe consider not. I say willingly because in some ways it's hard to escape as many apps and software now have it integrated with little or no way to opt out. We live in a world where we are victims of our own dependency on technology, especially for work. And I'm not talking about people who are in a space where opting out is not a possibility. I'm talking about using ChatGPT or Grok to ask questions or feeding prompts into Canva to build an invitation, which you can either make by other means or pay a working artist or designer to do.
You might ask, well, why is AI so bad in the first place? The short of it is land use and water consumption. While data centers have existed for quite some time, the rate at which they are being built or being pushed to be built is almost breakneck at this moment. The large data centers that are the focus of large-scale pushback are known as hyperscale data centers, as they may be the size of several hundred football fields. These large data centers often become the hub for cloud and AI infrastructures for companies.
The impact that data centers have on the spaces that they are built within is enormous, including draws on electrical power, which often sees offset costs on the home owners and small businesses in the area. Air pollution and air quality issues, as many data centers run on gas fire generation with diesel fire generators for backup. Noise pollution from cooling systems and generators that last for hours and can impact hearing in nearby communities. Shifting land priorities away from agriculture and ranching, placing burdens on marginalized communities where poverty is already an issue, and water consumption.
It is estimated by the Houston Advanced Research Center at the University of Houston that data centers in Texas will use as much as 399 billion gallons of water a year in 2030. How can Texas, which is incredibly drought-ridden at the moment, look at the city of Corpus Christi, afford to pay the water dividends that are equivalent to about 16 feet of water a year from Lake Mead, which holds about 157,000 acres of water?
Where is all the water going? Well, the water is used for evaporative room cooling, which is one of the simplest and cheapest ways to cool servers. The water isn't used, then released as treatable wastewater, it literally evaporates. So the water is being used and then not returned to the communities from which it is drawn. While data centers have been more commonplace for over a decade, the AI ramp up has certainly exacerbated a once quote unquote manageable issue. But water use for cooling is only part of the issue, as many data centers are using electricity from gas fueled power plants, which are using water to create steam to turn their turbines, and the microchips themselves, which are a part of the data centers, which require an intense amount of water to produce.
And while data centers are continuing to grow unchecked, it is the people, you and me, that are suffering. While a majority of new data centers are being constructed in water-strapped regions of the West, whose water woes are much greater than the East, the Mid-Atlantic region, specifically Virginia, has seen an exponential growth, as it is currently the place with the most data centers worldwide.
This explosive growth impacts land and water use, as the Potomac has become a large draw for data centers. But not only that, data centers have encroached on public lands and are either poised to or already have made impacts on the following national park sites: Manassas National Battlefield Park, Prince William Forest Park, Wilderness Battlefield, Shenandoah National Park, the Appalachian Trail, Harpers Ferry National Historic Park, and the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal Historic Park. Ooh, so how does this make us feel?
Well, I mean, it feels like something is just coming through and like eating up our, you know.
It's the nothing from the Neverending Story.
I mean, it is. It does feel like that.
Yeah.
It does feel like that. It feels like, especially not like she's going to fix everything, but I was really happy to see that Aaron Brockovich got involved.
Yeah.
Like the real life Aaron Brockovich got involved with the data center water situation.
Yeah.
Especially like recently we have the all of the people who are affected in that one particular area and all their water is brown.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, this is literally what Aaron Brockovich is about.
Right.
Companies coming in and saying like, well, we're taking the water supply and your water supply is going to be disgusting now. And that just is what it
is. And poisonous.
And poisonous.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We'll kill you. You
yeah.
know?
And everyone should be mad at this. I don't
Everybody should be mad at
also
this.
Also a reason to not be using AI. Sorry. We have lasted a long time without
it.
We have come very far as a species without it.
That's right.
And unless this is, again, I maintain, doing something to benefit the greater good, the greater humanity, solving hunger issues, fixing the climate problem, then no one should be using it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like,
well, also, it's not a sustainable technology.
No.
There's no way to, right now, there's no way that people are building it that they're like, it's fine, it's clean, it's sustainable, it's giving back to the earth. Like, that's just not happening.
And that's where we need to be when it comes to technology at this moment in history.
Oh, water is our
Greatest resource.
Greatest resource. Yep. Without it, we die.
Yeah.
Period. Without it, nothing happens.
Yep.
And the fact that, like, it's, you know, like, there are other countries where, like, the runoff from water is used for other things, right? Like, as you were mentioning before, like, the water passes through, like, a power plant, and then it is used to...
As treatable wastewater.
As treatable wastewater or something right. like that. But this is, like, no, it just evaporates.
Right.
And then we just have to maybe wait for it to come back as
yeah.
rain.
Yeah.
But we're likely not going to get that right.
Right.
We know that there are so many ways to get outside and explore the national parks. And if you are thinking about finally renting an RV this summer to have an adventure of a lifetime, then look no further than Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the United States, making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or camper without owning one.
They have thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, available right in your neighborhood, and you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. It's so easy. It's only three simple steps to get started on your adventure.
First, search and choose an RV that fits your trip and group size. Then, book with confidence. Insurance, support, and protection are all included. And finally, hit the road or arrive and relax, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered.
As people who love exploring and love getting into the national parks, we don't own an RV or camper, but sometimes we want that. And that's why Outdoorsy is the perfect solution.
Right now, our listeners can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with code GAZE at outdoorsy.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com. And use our code GAZE, GAZE, at checkout to remove service fees. And that is outdoorsy.com. Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah with over 10 episodes across two separate seasons? It would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Unfortunately, there is not a great deal of federal regulation on data centers at the moment. In fact, quite the opposite, as in our environmental terrorist in chief has basically opened the door to incentivize the building of data centers and giving the AI industry carte blanche. While states are grappling with ways to rein in the expansive growth and communities are fighting back, there are financial incentives, although short-lived, that communities who are approving data centers are clamoring for. So, yet again, capitalism for the loss.
Water use, AI, and climate change are always hot-button issues for us because they impact our environment. The environment and the ecosystems of park spaces, specifically those in desert landscapes, are incredibly resilient and amazing spaces. And like our other park spaces, we want to keep them viable for the plants and animals within them. As we start off this summit episode on environment in regards to our parks, let's turn our attention first to Death Valley National Park.
Located in southeastern California, on the border of Nevada, Death Valley National Park is actually the largest national park within the contiguous U.S., beating out the park that most people think is the largest, initially even us, being Yellowstone National Park.
We were treated to some interesting animal sightings here, including pupfish in the nearby Ash Meadows Wildlife Refuge. While pupfish can be found within Death Valley, in Ash Meadow, you can see them at a few pools, including King's Pool and Devil's Hole. And what's so dang special about pupfish? Well, for starters, they were kind of instrumental in securing species protections in wildlife habitats, a Supreme Court case that has had ripple effects since it was decided in the 1970s.
And the thing about pupfish is that they are teeny tiny, so while spotting them with the naked eye might be easy, getting a close-up view involves binoculars or cameras, especially at Devil's Hole.
Death Valley is not a place you would think of having pools and ponds, but there are actually some within the park that help to support amphibians, like the red spotted toad, the western toad, the Pacific tree frog, and the bullfrog. These watering holes like Salt Creek and those found in Ash Meadow are integral for the wildlife inside these spaces,
including birds. While we didn't see a great variety of birds within the park during our visit, the spring migration was already in full swing. Some of the commonly spotted birds within the park include the American coot, the greater roadrunner, phanopepla, and hummingbirds. Birds that pass through the park on their migration include the American crow, Bullock's oriole, indigo buntings, and verdins, to name a few, in a group of over 100. Apparently, March is a pretty dead time of year to do any birding within the park. So if you want to see the migratory birds pass through, late April to early May and August through September is your time to go.
I think we kind of just missed our window for this, or it was somehow too early in April when we were there.
I think we were too early.
Like it would have peaked a few weeks later.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we saw some. Yeah. There were definitely some ravens around. Yeah. But we
saw some on the Mount Perry hike, but they were so fast it was hard to identify. I thought I saw a goldfinch up there, mm-hmm. but that's kind of about as recognizable birds go. Aside from fish and birds, a variety of mammals, including desert bighorns, coyotes, mountain lions, kit foxes, burro, black-tailed jackrabbits, and porcupine, along with a variety of squirrels, mice, rats, and bats, populate different areas of the park. Did we see any of these animals?
No.
No, we did not.
No, we didn't see any of them. Mm-mm. But what we did see were reptiles, specifically chuckawalla, both on the Mosaic Canyon hike and Dante's View to Mount Perry hike. These were pretty chill for the most part, and they were no bother at all. Being a desert park, the reptile list is quite extensive, including desert tortoise, collared lizards, western brush lizards, and plenty of my favorite things, snakes. Aside from rattlesnakes and sidewinders, the California king snake, Great Basin gopher snake, and the western ground snake fill out the population with plenty of others. And no thanks. And how many snakes did we see in Death Valley?
None.
None. We saw none. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the opportunity to see snakes in this park, but we sure did get our chance in Saguaro National Park when we passed over a rattlesnake and both scurried down the trail in a hurry. Do go listen to that episode because it's great.
Aside from its animals, Death Valley National Park is a fascinating landscape of its own. Known for being the hottest place on Earth and the driest place in North America, it is also the lowest elevation on the continent at 282 feet below sea level. Death Valley is mountainous while also containing dunes and desert, salt flats, and fault lines. One of the largest protected salt flats within the world, Badwater Basin, exists within the park. And sometimes, if you're lucky and a hurricane or an unusual bout of rainy weather hits the park, Badwater Basin becomes a very shallow lake that you can wade into. We say wade when in actuality, it's just up to your ankles most of the time, or lower.
In a space where water is precious and not incredibly abundant, the flora of the park have grown to adapt as either escaper plants, like wildflowers, which bloom when convenient for them, resistor plants, which have grown to adapt to the extreme temperature, like cacti, succulents, and mesquite, and evader plants that live near a consistent water source.
Now, let's turn our gaze almost directly west between the Central Valley and the coast of California to Pinnacles National Park. And one of the main reasons to go to Pinnacles National Park is for its population of these once-endangered and highly elusive birds, the California quail.
Incorrect. And you know that's wrong. That's right. He did this just to...
Mm-hmm. For comedy.
Exactly. It is the California condor, and they are a majestic. They are these majestic little thrice divorced winged babies that I love and I'm obsessed with, and I will protect them for my entire life. And if I am mother to the crows, then I am supreme to the condors. Now, part of the reason the condors are here is because the California Condor Recovery Program, which was launched in the 1980s due to an incredible decline in condor populations. They were down to 22 wild condors prior to the start of this program, which is like nothing. Yeah. That's like, hi, we are moments away from extinction. Yep. Now, the population is much healthier, and Pinnacles National Park just so happens to be one of the release sites for California condors. So all the more reason to go.
Now, Dusty, when we were actually able to see condors, was it down on the forest level or in the low foothills?
No, girl, it was not. We had to get way up high because condors love to roost up high in the peaks of the Pinnacles.
And what is a pinnacle? And what is so special about Pinnacles National Park?
Okay, so a pinnacle. It's like a slender, tall, individual rock column, which is most of the time isolated from other rocks or groups of rocks. So while the landscape of Pinnacles National Park has elevation and feels mountainous, it really isn't mountains at the top. It's these things called pinnacles. Pinnacles which sometimes fall and create cave-like structures called talus caves within the park, like Bear Gulch Caves and the Balcones Cave System.
The park is preserved for its unique ecosystem, biodiversity, and the incredible natural features of the pinnacles themselves. And how did these incredible landscapes form? You guessed it, our friend erosion in partnership with our other pal, plate tectonics. On the plate tectonics end of things, the main causes of this were through subduction, and through fault movements, or what is known as transform boundaries. Through some volcanic activity, which eventually dried up, and erosion through ice, wind, and rain, which took its course over millions of years, we ended up with an incredible landscape that is Pinnacles National Park.
Aside from my very precious condor babies, other birds that you can find within the park include the condor lookalikes, or what we call non-dors, which are the turkey vulture. You can also find prairie falcons, red-tail hawks, and golden eagles, and the acorn woodpecker. This bird is really neat because of the way they store its food. So we saw one of them.
Yeah.
Well, first we saw
a lot of the trees.
The trees. Yeah. The trees look like someone with trypophobia will not like this tree, because the tree is covered in holes and it's just like these little burrows. And inside,
it's like Roxy and Velma took their Tommy guns at the end of literally Hot Honey Rag and
it's
shot
just
the trees
all over. Uh-huh. Right. But in some of those holes are acorns, and literally these acorn woodpeckers spend all day making new holes in trees and just moving their acorns around. So we saw quite a few of these trees, and then we saw the birds, and we did see them moving their acorns around.
While there are a great variety of non-native fish, including catfish, green sunfish, and mosquito fish, the latter two were also seen or being studied while we were at Death Valley National Park in the Ash Meadows Wildlife Refuge. The only native fish to Pinnacles National Park is the three-spined stickleback.
A great variety of mammals, including coyotes, mountain lions, badgers, bats, chipmunks, gray foxes, and brush rabbits are native animals within the park, while introduced species like the feral pig once wreaked havoc on the delicate ecosystem and were effectively removed from the park after their introduction.
The park is home to an extensive system of lichen on the rocks and pinnacles themselves. Lichen, a partnership between algae and fungus, are such an important part of the park's ecosystem. The park is also home to extensive wildflower blooms, fern species, and a variety of oaks, pines, cottonwoods, sycamores, and buckeye trees.
As we move a little further east from California to the much drier, more deserty parks, like the largest gypsum sand field in the world in White Sands National Park in New Mexico, and the saguaro cactus wonderland of Saguaro National Park in Arizona, we have actually spent a really concise amount of time in talking about the flora and fauna of these parks.
You can hear all about the flora and fauna of these spaces in the masterfully written and outlined episodes by Dusty in our trail mix, The Wildlife of White Sands, and trail mix, The Many Cacti of Saguaro National Park. Therefore, we wanted to take some time to underscore how climate change in these four parks, most of them desert, will continue to impact these park spaces and desert environments.
Regardless of where in the world they are located, desert environments are in for quite a change. While the deserts of Asia may see more rainfall and monsoons, this may be offset by higher evaporation through higher temperatures, where the Southwest is already seeing the drying effect and loss of water that many of the deserts of the world already are.
Deserts depend on snowmelt from higher elevations, and as weather patterns shift and snow is either less abundant in the winter or melts too fast in in the spring and summer, these arid landscapes are receiving less water on the whole. As previously stated, any rain from monsoons or changing weather patterns that favor more rain in these arid spaces would not be as nourishing because the water would more quickly evaporate due to rising temperatures.
While deserts are predicted to become hotter, they have also been predicted to become bigger. That, however, is dependent on the biocrust of the desert. Desert biocrust makes up about 12% of the Earth's surface. It is a rich tapestry of microorganisms, algae, fungus, and lichen, which provide life to an otherwise barren landscape.
Biocrust takes hundreds of years to recover, which is why when hiking in desert parks, you're encouraged to stay on the path. Why is biocrust important? Because biocrust makes it possible for plants to grow and animals to thrive in the desert. If climate change exacerbates as it is predicted to, the loss of biocrust will see deserts becoming larger and starting to encroach on more fertile land on the fringes.
When fertile land goes through desertification, the land loses its ability to hold moisture, reduces biodiversity within the area, creates soil instability, and general breakdown of the ecosystem. Any plant life that was once acting as a carbon sink or helping toward carbon sequestration is also lost, helping to continue to drive climate change.
Climate stress is already being felt by the plants and animals of deserts. Since 2020, Arizona has seen long stretches of record-breaking heat, which have pushed one of its most iconic plants to the brink, the saguaro cactus. While these desert cacti are built for the heat of the Sonoran Desert, these intense and prolonged heat waves with no relief have seen a greater dieback of saguaros as the rate has jumped from 2% annually to 7%.
And it isn't just the saguaro cacti. Many plants of the Sonoran Desert have shifted toward higher elevations as the low desert and its extreme heat is less conducive towards survival. And unlike Treebeard from Lord of the Rings, it's not as though these plants can get up on their two legs, pack their bags, and walk uphill. They are slowly migrating as their seeds are spread into areas which are more conducive for the animal species that carry them. The higher elevations, while technically more temperate, are also feeling the heat that the plants and the animals of the low desert areas were once well adapted for.
Of these animals, burrowing animals fare much better than birds as the aridity and heat of deserts increase. That is because most burrowing animals, of which there has been relatively no change related to population or impacts of climate change, are most active at night when the landscape of the desert is much cooler. In the daytime, they sleep below the ground, which aids in their survival as their subterranean homes are much cooler, allowing for less stress on their bodies.
Birds, on the other hand, as is the case worldwide, are struggling in desert climates. In the Mojave Desert, located in California, Utah, and Nevada, there is a 42% decline of bird diversity. Birds, unlike ground mammals, cannot burrow, and while they may be able to head to higher, more temperate regions within desert landscapes, the toll the heat takes on their bodies is immense. While humans can sweat to get rid of excess heat and cool down, birds and small desert animals cannot. Instead, they pant, or in the case of some birds, they pant in overdrive. This panting expends energy and water, however, and puts desert birds, which need 3.3 times as much water as desert animals, in a major water deficit just to stay cool.
While there may seemingly be some inevitables when it comes to climate change in spaces like Death Valley, Pinnacles, White Sands, and Saguaro National Parks, like many other desert landscapes, it all depends on people, how we move forward from here, manage the landscape, and seriously address climate change while not reversing course entirely. We may at least alter it.
The sources for today's summit on environment and wildlife include the National Park Service,
the Audubon.org article, How Climate Change Pushes Even the Hardiest Desert Birds Past Their Limits by Hannah Waters,
the UC Berkeley research article, In a Desert Seared by Climate Change, Burrowers Fare Better Than Birds, by Kara Mank,
the EBSCO.com article, Deserts and Climate Change,
the Earth.org article, Desertification and Climate Change, What's the Link, by Christian Saravia,
the WeForum.org article, Deserts Are Getting Hotter and Bigger, Protecting the Biocrust Can Prevent Them from Spreading, by Douglas Broom,
the British Ecological Society article, Desert Vegetation Changing Due to Climate Change,
the World Resource Institute article, From Energy Use to Air Quality, The Many Ways Data Centers Are Affecting U.S. Communities, by Carla Walker and Ian Goldsmith.
The Lincoln Institute of Land Policy article, Data Drain, The Land and Water Impacts of the AI Boom, by John Gorey.
And the NPCA press release, New Reports Sounds Alarm on Data Centers' Impacts to National Parks Across Mid-Atlantic Calls for Common Sense Reform. And now, let's end the summit with a game. Okay, so I've got two trivia games for you. One is called Flora Fauna Rhyme Time.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a clue, and it's going to be something flora or something fauna based off of the clue. And there's 10 of these. Okay. And then we'll talk about the second game after that.
Great. Love it.
This Like a Virgin Queen Mother of 1980s animals.
What is Madonna Fauna?
That's right.
Okay, great.
For 200. This guaranteed to get you high animal.
What is pot one of the words? Weed?
What's the word for that that rhymes with fauna?
Oh, I see.
Everything's going to rhyme with flora or fauna.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, got it. I thought it was flora, like I'm expected to know the common flora and fauna of these parks, and it's going to rhyme with one of those.
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
What's marijuana fauna?
Oh, there
come
it is.
On, girl.
Thank you.
All right, for 300, this Warrior II pigeon or Dundasana animal.
What is a sauna fauna?
That's right. I was going to say it's also a program we use. Mm-hmm. This reptile with the spiky mohawk animal.
What is an iguana fauna?
That's right. This 90s grunge band or state of being animal. Or state of enlightenment.
What is Nirvana fauna?
That's correct. For 600, this glowing, possibly colored light around your field plant.
What is aura flora?
This cat for 700.
What is a flora aura? There it is.
For 700, this character in Guys and Dolls headwear plant.
Oh, God.
Or I should say, what characters in Guys and Dolls would wear as headwear plant?
That rhymes with flora.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I don't know.
What's a fedora flora?
Fedora flora. Okay, got it.
For 800, this music bracelet or avatar planet plant.
What is Aurora flora?
Mm-mm.
No, what is that?
What's Pandora flora?
Oh, there you go.
For 900, this Spanish married woman plant.
What is Senora flora?
That's correct. And 4000, this Jewish book of faith plant.
What is the Torah flora?
That's correct. So that's flora, fauna, rhyme time.
I love that.
For our second game, we're playing a game that I really like that we haven't played in a while, and it's called...
Mountain Ranges?
No.
Girl, you better know Mountain Ranges.
I would never do that to you. I'm not here to be like, I hope you listened because I have a test for you now, unlike some people sitting across from me.
I do that to you all the time.
I'm calling you out. This is an acronym game. I'm going to give you clues that are going to all create acronyms for the word snake.
Oh, okay.
So it's like altered acronyms.
I love this game.
Okay?
I'm here.
So for... 100. This front woman of Fleetwood Mac, plus these fair, tall, pointed-eared creatures of the North Pole and Middle Earth if they were clumsy.
Oh, what is Stevie Nicks and Klutzy Elk?
Not elk. Middle Earth, pointy-eared people.
It's Stevie Nicks and Klutzy Elves.
That's correct. For 200... The alternate name of what Romy and Michelle invented, push forward, nice or caring things to do, or things one has to do.
The best thing I can come up with right now is sticky notes and like kind acts or something like that. That's all I got.
So sticky notes, push forward, advance, kind. What are something you might have to do after work or on the weekend?
Errands.
Yeah, kind errands.
Great.
Mm-hmm. For 300.
It's the logic for me.
Mm-hmm. Obstinate or unbending, chains, baubles, or jewelry that leave regal or royal green gems behind.
Okay, so the best thing I've got is stubborn necklaces, arrivederci, kingly emeralds.
Oh, you were so close.
I know.
What's something, if you leave someone behind, and I often say this to you when you when you don't leave me an audio message, what's the word?
Abandon. There it is. Abandon kingly emeralds.
That's right. Okay, for 400, short sleeps on your feet consistently destroy or slay pleasure.
Okay, what is standing naps always, what's the next
destroy
part?
Destroy or slay pleasure.
I don't know. It's like standing naps always.
What's another word?
Kill effervescence.
Oh, How about enjoyment? We'll enjoyment. Take effervescence, okay, though. Great, good great. Job. I know these are hard. This is a lot these of are, like... I,
but they're fun. Yeah, they're making it's a my lot brain of, stretch. Yeah,
brain stretching. Okay, and for 500.
I mean, at least... I mean, there. I did make a shady comment about logic earlier, but they do have logic.
Yeah, I know they do. So don't sit over there with your judgment.
Honey, it's all we've got sometimes.
It's your only defense mechanism.
Uh-huh.
All right. And for 500, electricity-bound lap adornments used for wiping your mouth at dinner take on or in objects in motion.
Okay. I think I've got it.
Okay.
It's the first word I'm struggling with. Electricity bound.
So if I was to like rub my feet with socks on the carpet and then touch a doorknob. What kind of?
Okay. Is it what is static napkins absorb kinetic energy?
That's correct. Look at you go.
I did it.
You did it.
I'm very proud of myself.
And that's
on that.
Snake.
Snake, the acronym game.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Dallard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.